We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hour number 3. Good morning, Upstate. This is the Tara Show. I am not Tara. You probably surmised that by now. I don't even sound like myself normally. So let's, you know. You heard who I am. Ingalls Advantage Talk Line is 800-347-1063. The Common Sense Retirement Planning text line is 71307. El Presidente.
Good morning, sir.
Before we take off, let's take a call from a Vietnam veteran, shall we? Ron?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
I am great, great, great. I'm up here at Asheville, VA. But anyway, what I wanted to bring up was everybody's jumping them down about us pulling out 28 to 50 special forces troops for the Kurds.
Right.
But I kind of remember, and I think you do too, back in 75 when we pulled out of Vietnam, how many of the Vietnamese did we leave to the Khmer Rouge?
Well, the entire of the South, the entirety of the South.
I know. And there wasn't a big stink raised up about that, you know?
Well, you know, here's the thing. This is the thing about, and it started with that war. And you're a Vietnam vet, right?
Yes.
See, I think the biggest misservice you can do to any soldier, sailor, Marine, is to put them in a war that you don't intend to win. And I don't know where we lost that, because I was 14 years old when we pulled out of Vietnam. I didn't join the military myself till 1984. But in Vietnam, for some reason, that we just wouldn't win. We just couldn't win. I served with guys that served in Vietnam that told me about some of the operations they would go out on. And it was the craziest stuff I've ever heard. So my question is this, and I would like to hear your take on this. Why would we send soldiers that we've spent a lot of time training, we've turned them into something different from what they were, why would we send them somewhere where we don't care if they win or lose? And as a matter of fact, we might prolong it. Why would we do that?
You know, that is one of the questions that we're probably asking for years to come.
Absolutely. And the problem is that we're the ones that go into the meat grinder while the guys that are making the decision just sit around and, you know, make sure they got enough ice in their glass.
That's it. Who are you stationed in Europe?
Bamberg. First Armored Division, 154 Mech Infantry, sir. Mailed foot, sir.
I was 11 Bravo, stationed in 4th and 502nd in Berlin. We guarded Rudolf Hess until he claimed to have plunged himself, and guarded Ronald Reagan when he came into Berlin.
Yeah, the Berlin experience. I visited Berlin when the wall was still up. I did not get out. After I got out was when the wall came down. And when the wall was up, that was a very interesting place to be, wasn't it?
Awesome. Miss Berlin.
Very good, sir.
Look, I want to thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate your service.
Yes, sir. Well, I appreciate yours. Thank you. El Presidente.
Yes, sir.
Viva El Presidente!
So, you know, I just had this call from this guy was wanting to know why I would be upset about something that couldn't happen. One of the other things that's going along with this is that they're trying to limit speech, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't mind so much what's people having opposing arguments, opposing opinions. But when they want to regulate speech, which is something that all of the tech people are trying to do.
Yes.
All of the, everybody in news wants to do. Everybody, they want to shape opinions. They're not really, you know, CNN has gotten out there and pretty much admitted, we're trying to shape the news to change an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to get people to, because one, they know they can't do it unless we voluntarily acquiesce.
Yes.
So this part where we get out there, is it a good idea to just sit back and say, well, it can't happen here. So we just, let's talk about, you know, do you see the Braves are been eliminated?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that people have said can't happen here that do and have and will continue to happen.
Well, I mean, Antifa is a reality. And in certain places now, I would love to see Antifa try to do what they do in Portland around here. That would be interesting.
Yeah, I do think that there are some cultural differences that are related to geography.
Apparently. Plus, when you have a mayor that's also the police commissioner, he tells the police, if, you know, those people in the black mask, just don't mess with them.
Yeah. It's, I mean, why in the world? I mean, I that's the part I don't get. Number one, in almost every municipality and almost every state, you as an adult cannot walk around with a mask on.
Yep.
That's a crime right there. Why not just, okay, boom, you're arrested. I mean, just if it takes 1,000 police to do it, do it. I mean, and you'll put this thing to an end because these are violent people. And then they're, you know, when these groups show up, there's a reason they've got a mask on because they don't want to be identified.
Yeah. In the New York Times, they had a writer. His name is Andrew Marantz. He seems to believe that since we are willing to talk about gun control, we should also be willing to discuss speech control. Because speech can be dangerous. Speech can be violence.
Well, the violence is up to the person that listens to the speech and chooses to react in that way. And that's the person who's responsible, not for the speaker. It is for the listener. And if you are going to be motivated to violence by speech, that's an issue with you.
Yeah, you.
I hear plenty of things almost every day that if I had just a hair a little less patience, I may be willing to take out my frustration on some of these speakers. But I'm not going to. That's just it. I mean, that's where you've got a First Amendment right. You can say what you want. I may not agree with the language. I may not agree with the concept, the idea, the premise. But as long as that speech is not being used to deny my rights, you know, I'm not going to worry about it.
But that's the thing, isn't it? All of the people that want to impose the speech control and the gun control and the power control and the population control and the food control and all these other controls, they're quite happy trampling on your rights if it serves some collectivist.
And it's being done by corporations. That's what I think is so fascinating, that we have, in our history, we have always been concerned that there was going to be some type of government censorship, that big brother or big government or the deep state was going to be the one that is limiting our speech and our ability to discuss political issues and to, you know, have differing views on things. But it is because we have surrendered ourselves to the free social media applications for communication. And now these corporations are turning around being influenced by leftist, progressive, secularists who are going to then try to use these corporations to determine, oh, well, if you're talking about this subject in this way, that's hate speech and we can't allow that. We must protect the public from that. That is not something that our corporation is going to endorse, condone, nor allow to happen. And so it is not the law, the rule, the ordinance of government, but it is the corporation that is being used as a tool by these people within government to then do the dirty work.
Did you see Zuckerberg get out there and try to rewrite the history of Facebook? Because my understanding with Facebook was it was sort of a dating app for college people.
That was always the narrative.
Now it's always been about you know, making sure that we do no harm and everyone gets a say and all this. I mean, he still looks like a kid to me.
Yeah.
And you know, these guys that get out there like this guy in New York Times, he says that he pretends that gun control has led to such an unmitigated good. This means that totalitarian ideas and restricting speech that some people would find repulsive, that also would be good.
Well, that's someone whose opinion I find repulsive.
Yeah, well.
He
lives in a city where one property owner can look at another property owner and say, I own your property. And then there's this in the city of New York, there is an agency that will tie you up in court trying to prove the other guy that you actually own your stuff, even though you got blueprints and surveyor's reports. You'll be in court defending yourself for 15 years because of these agencies.
Absolutely nuts.
Yeah. So it's a crazy thing. I loves it so much. When we get back. Thank you, El Presidente.
Certainly.
Viva El Presidente!
Yes.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Escape from L.A. First of all, Escape from L.A. had the best named villain of any villain I've ever seen, with the possibility of Casanova Frankenstein and men from I can't even remember the name of that movie, but Mystery Men. But do you remember the name of the villain in Escape from L.A.? Cuervo Jones. So he's basically tequila. I want you to try to work on getting my first name changed legally to Cuervo between now and the end of the show. Okay, Ghost Rider? Thank you very much. The thing about Escape from L.A. was that the Cuervo was a villain who could cut off the world's power supply in the plot of the film. Now, California apparently cannot prevent wildfires because they don't like to cut the grass and do the weed eating. And so they've had these massive power shutdowns that leave hundreds of thousands of people without power, refrigeration, and if they're dependent on wells, running water. Then you have the state's high taxes and the cost of living. Gasoline is around $5 a gallon. Major cities in California are turning into open sewers where you've got sidewalks that serve as gender-neutral toilets, very politically correct. And for the normal people of California, which there's tens of millions of them, this is a strong argument for them to go elsewhere. The businesses they work at, the things they own. So the same goes for other big cities that are governed almost universally by the extreme left wing of the Democratic Party. Now, here's the thing. If you look at a big city, you can do just like that song about war. What is it good for? And it's the same answer, absolutely nothing, except possibly for museums and theaters and other downtown attractions. But cities are sort of obsolete. I mean, they were obsolete a century ago when Henry Ford wrote in My Life and Work. And finally, the overhead expense of living or doing business in the great cities is becoming so large as to be unbearable. It places so great a tax upon life that there's no surplus over to live on. The politicians have found it easy to borrow money, and they've borrowed to the limit. Within the last decade, the expense of running every city in the country has tremendously increased. A good part of that expense is for interest upon money borrowed, and the money has gone either into non-productive brick, stone, and mortar, or into necessities of city life such as water supplies and sewage systems at far above a reasonable cost. The cost of maintaining these works, the cost of keeping in order great masses of people and traffic, is greater than the advantage derived from community life. The modern city has been prodigal. It is a today bankrupt, and tomorrow it will cease to be. Cities actually came about for exactly two purposes, neither of which they serve today. Number one, they were to be centers of commerce, and number two, they were to be defensible positions around which you could build a wall. Sort of like L.A. in Escape from L.A. And, you know, you don't have to make the trip into the big city anymore to buy what you wanted. Cities are now nothing more than dense targets for empty, you know, for enemy bombers and ballistic missiles. San Francisco, who tried, you know, the Board of Supervisors of San Francisco, their job is to run the city of San Francisco, but no, they decided to label the NRA a domestic terrorist organization. Their new city seal should have that smiling poo emoji. And back in the day, in the medieval days, whenever you were emptying the chamber pot into the streets, you used to yell "Guardy Lou." So maybe they need to pick that back up. Their new mascot is the hepatitis virus, all three versions, A, B, and C, noting, and it's transmitted by excrement, and it's also transmitted by discarded hypodermic needles. And then there's the equally appropriate plague-carrying rat that has already been taken by Baltimore for their new mascot. But San Francisco is an outhouse city now, and that's being nice about it. The cost of living there is more than three times that of the average of the United States. Employers have to pay anybody that works there, if they're being paid hourly, $15.59 an hour. If you moved that job to a state like Michigan or Pennsylvania and you paid the minimum wage, $7.80 an hour, which would be a 50% reduction in labor costs, it would be a 50% increase for workers, because $7.80 buys 50% more in most of Pennsylvania and Michigan than $15.59 buys in San Francisco. And I'm not recommending that these guys pay as little as possible. But it should be, the determination of what is being paid should be determined by the people who have the jobs to begin with, who are providing the jobs, who create the jobs. And then if it's not fair or something, the people will leave working there. He will have nobody, and they'll go down a drain. Maybe they should consider moving the $50 an hour jobs out and paying $25 instead. A studio apartment, which is normally a closet with some floor space, rents in San Francisco for $3,000 a month. And so for these people making $15.59 an hour, they can't even live there. Los Angeles. Right now, they squander $2,370 per citizen household on welfare for people who are neither citizens nor legal guests of the United States. And now they plan to squander $700,000 per apartment to house homeless people. And in Allentown, Pennsylvania, you can buy a very nice little house for a tenth of that. You can buy a Quonset hut, and I've slept in many Quonset huts. You can build one of those for $13 less per square foot. Quonset huts can be built to resist hurricanes, and they would actually resist earthquakes. And the productive citizen households in these places, the makers who actually contribute to the economy, they need to move out and live their best life somewhere else. The cities, well, they're canceling themselves.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Let's go to BC in Greenville, sir. I'm sorry you had to wait as long as you have, and thank you for waiting. What can I do for you?
We could not have won in Vietnam and kept it won because we could not control the borders, and because we were on the mainland, the mainland with China.
Okay.
That's it.
Well, I mean, you know, the thing with Vietnam, and this is just what I was a kid during Vietnam. I've read a lot about it because I've served with a bunch of guys with it. I know that there was a lot of things going on because Vietnam was basically a proxy. South Vietnam was a proxy of the United States, and North Vietnam was a proxy of China. So it all came down to who wanted to keep supplying things as long as they did, and who wanted to control Vietnam, which I never have understood. I mean, now that Vietnam has been one Vietnam all of this time, they're becoming quite capitalistic, aren't they?
Well, hello?
I was asking you a question. Haven't they become sort of capitalistic? A lot of people like to go visit Vietnam. It's becoming sort of a tourist area now.
Yes, but aren't they still communist and under the thumb of China?
Yeah, and China has they also do. The thing with communism is it's really not very self-sustaining, and I don't know. You know, they're trying to, China always tries to control stuff around them. They want Taipei, Taiwan. They want Hong Kong. They want all this other stuff. And they wanted Vietnam, and the North Vietnamese were, they didn't care how many people died to get it. And that was what won the war for them, because they decided they were going to win it. That was my opinion.
My point is, if we can't recognize why we lost in Vietnam, how do we keep from having more Vietnam?
Well, I mean, I'm looking at what's happening in Syria right now, for example, and I don't have a problem with what's happening in Syria, because how long do we stay in something we're not going to try to win? We didn't even have a presence there, really. We had what? We had less than 100 people there. So, Yes, sir?
I've been saying for years on Facebook that the best outcome for Syria is to be under the thumb of Russia and Putin.
Well, they would certainly put a stop to in Russia. They don't have the kind of Islamic terrorism occurring there. So I see your point on that one. But
yes, Putin is strongly counter jihad, but he will work with the Muslims to get what he wants.
Well, that's unfortunately that's the hallmark of all totalitarian politicians, isn't it? They'll do whatever it takes to get what they want. They'll do whatever it takes to get what they want. But I do agree with you on the whole proxy thing. And thanks for holding as long as you did. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Combat, the way we do combat now, the way we wage combat is sort of interesting to me, because combat used to be the last thing we wanted to do. We tried very hard to stay out of World War II. We tried really hard to stay out of war. FDR did not want to go. And it was... I mean, the British, you know, the British didn't want to go. And then it changed from Chamberlain to Churchill. And then Churchill made all these statements about, we're going to fight you in the, we'll fight you in the dales and in the fields and in the streets and all these other things. And then he looked around, he said, oh, we have no guns. And then we had to airlift them 500,000 guns to in order to make good that goal. But we actually did everything we had to do to win in World War II. We backed up everything we were intended to do. And when we were drawn into it, it took a while for us to gain some momentum, but then we gained that momentum and then we won. And we haven't waged war like that since. And I understand that, because war is it's a failure of diplomacy. This is where we can't get along, so now let's just fight and kill each other. Okay, I get that part. But Vietnam was absolute. To this day, when I'm reading about things, it was to prevent Vietnam from falling into the hands of communism. And the whole goal initially was to send in special forces, and they would train the indigenous people there and then lead them in fights. And then it wasn't until Johnson got into office that we really began to escalate sending troops over there. And then we started fighting a war without it being declared. And at the same time, we weren't fighting a war, because we would go out and take, you know, we'd take certain pieces of real estate and then pull back. We go out and fight over a piece of dirt and then pull back. At one point, they all of the rescue missions for pilots would be across enemy lines. So they'd be doing these air rescue missions. And on, like, there would be ceasefires on Christmas Day. And there would be these air rescue teams out there trying to rescue these pilots that are down. And then at the stroke of midnight, when it was Christmas Day, they had to turn around and go back and leave the pilot. And that's the way we've been waging war. Now, the rules of engagement, I hope, have changed a little bit. I haven't been in the military since 1990, so I couldn't tell you what they are. But I largely suspect that it's still very much a political thing in a lot of cases. And if you're not willing to go in there and fight a war or wage combat against somebody with the full intention of defeating them, absolutely defeating them, I don't see why we would send any of our people to go do it. I don't see why we'd send any of our people to go do it. The whole thing with the Syria thing, by treaty, we're supposed to be on the side of Turkey, because Turkey is a part of NATO. And at the same time, we got a NATO ally fighting, going against the Kurds, who we trained like the Montagnards that we trained in, the Montagnard tribesmen that we trained in Vietnam. And we're trying to give them a chance to get out of there. But all of the Kurds in Syria are not created equal either. They're not all buddy pals of ours. So when you hear them saying, well, we betrayed the Kurds, that's a political stunt once again. War is very political. It's for the politicians back here, it's a nauseating game to watch. I would serve this country again. I would wear the uniform. I would go into combat if I was capable of doing it again, if I had to. But all the while, in the back of my mind, would be playing this idea that I'm simply a chess piece being moved around on a map by politicians, because that's part of the oath of the military. You will obey the orders of the civilian leaders above your military hierarchy. So I get what BC was saying, though. The Vietnam War was a proxy war, very much so a proxy war. And it's never going to, no matter how many times we go through all of these things, looking back at it always disturbs me for the people that we sent over there. The people that have been coming back since Afghanistan, you know, they're sort of hailed as heroes. That was not the case with the Vietnam veteran. They were called all kinds of things. All kinds of things. And I can hear that. When I'm looking at all of these people that call in about Vietnam or something like that, I try to have as much empathy as I can, because that was a time I would have served with those guys. They were giants on the battlefield. I would have been happy to serve with them, proud to serve with them. And they came back to a country that didn't appreciate what they were, what they did, and wasn't backing them the whole time. And I don't understand. I understand that that could be disheartening, but don't worry, BC, you were a giant on the battlefield, pal. You were a giant.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Here's a text. I don't think you get it. You're saying that Trump, the man who feigned bone spurs to not fight, should be given the benefit of the doubt when he betrayed his promises. Shameful. Well, here's the thing about that. See, you can't fake bone spurs. Don't fall prey to the urban legend or whatever it is you're hearing. If you were being drafted back in the time of that era, and you said, I've got bone spurs so I can't go, they'd stick you on an x-ray machine and look and see if you had bone spurs. So he either had bone spurs and didn't go, or you just heard the wrong thing. Then there's the whole part of the draft. You know, it hasn't been that long ago, though. I mean, I had relatives that were drafted. And I as an ex-military guy, I disagree with the draft. I've always disagreed with the draft. Having a government say, you will fight for the country. You know, I know other countries do that, and everybody be like, oh, well, it's your duty and everything. Well, you know, this is a federal republic, and, you know, I don't, you know, which way is it going to be? I much prefer the all-volunteer force, but I don't think you get it. You can't get out there and say, oh, I've got a bad elbow. They'll look if they're trying to draft you. They'll look. So I've never heard the bone spurs story, nor do I care about it. The promise that he kept was that he would not keep us in wars and put us in war. So to that end, he's keeping his promises. So, you know, chew on that one, why don't you? I've read a story about this this guy from that grew up in a Yugoslavian ghetto. And he had a childhood spent with only limited contact with anyone outside of the community. And he wanted to grow up to become a conservative activist. I've never thought about that, but yeah, he wanted to. But he was coming up with all of these complicated schemes, and a lot of it involved contacting and placating a non-existent hierarchy that was constantly watching and knew all things and had the ultimate veto on just about everything. And he was told that all of that was unnecessary. And he would look at them and say, oh, okay. But then he came up with a similar scheme in short order, because this is how things worked in Tito's Yugoslavia. And even though he'd been raised in the U.S., he'd been exposed to it and internalized in it to the nth degree. And he was living in a mental communist dictatorship and always would be. Now, recently I read about Rashida Tlaib, where she was out there talking about what should be done to Donald Trump's cabinet once they were arrested. This is sort of old, but I was interested in this. That's that same mentality at work right there. You know what you know when you live the way you've been brought up. There's no reason to arrest the cabinet. We've never had a cabinet arrested before, and no reason to believe that it will ever happen. But overlooked in all of that was the fact that this is exactly what her background leads to. Gaza did that after Hamas took over from al-Fatah in 2007. Only there wasn't any debate about what would be done with them. They were taken to the tops of tall buildings and thrown off. Tlaib is living in a dream Gaza where the law is whatever the man holding the AK says, where the strong do what they will and the weak endure what they must. But she didn't actually suggest anybody be tossed off of a building. Then we've seen this recently. I mean, Obama and his handler, Valerie Jarrett, they both grew up outside of the United States in third world tyrannies and with politics that would warp the minds of even the most strong wills. With Obama, it was Mohammed Suharto in Indonesia. With Valerie, it was the Iran under the Shah of Iran. So both internalized aspects of these societies, as was apparent in the way they did their business. And Obama, who was guided by Jarrett, became accustomed to making decisions with no outside consultation and carrying them out by executive fiat, exactly as would have occurred in Indonesia and Iran. And then, you know, there was all that money we did let loose of. We never sent them a pallet of money, but we did unfreeze a bunch of their assets. So, in effect, we gave them their money, made it available to them. So, this is what we have now. This is what we have. We have people actually out there discussing what we should do with the cabinet once we depose them. Not once their term is over. When we depose them. So that just, on one hand, it's funny, and on the other hand, it's a little chilling. Because the squad is going to get bigger unless something's done about that.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.